On this edition of Retronauts, Cacho. Someone say it.
On?
Thanks. Welcome to Retronauts. I'm your host today, Ray Barnholt, and with me, as usual, is Bob Mackey.
Hey, everybody.
On the line, Jeremy Parrish.
Hi.
And today, our guest is Justin Haywald, who you may remember from 1UP or recently from GameSpot. Hi, Justin.
I'm just a harbinger of good news and glad tidings.
Okay.
But thank you for having me on this episode.
Yes.
Because this is something near and dear to our heart, especially when we were at 1UP.
You're right. First of all, you know, this is the last Retronauts of the season, and since I'm here, I thought it was finally time to talk about Game Center CX, which is not a retro game, but a Japanese TV show about retro games. This is actually a backer request, which comes to us from Joey Chu, who you may now know forever as the guy on the PlayStation mural.
Yeah, he tweets at me. I'm like, that guy's famous now.
Yeah, about that. We knew him before he was cool.
Mm.
And, you know, I say it's actually a backer request because, as Justin sort of alluded to, if you're a longtime listener of Retronauts or just a personal friend of mine, you know how I would go on about Game Center CX.
You had the premier blog for detailing Game Center CX back in the day, Crunk Games. Is that still active?
Oh, yeah. Well, not active. It's up, but no, I stopped doing it. We'll talk about that, but... You know, Game Center CX was kind of this current that ran under me while I was at 1UP because I happened to find out about it right after I moved to San Francisco for the job. And so afterwards, I just fell in love with the show. And, you know, there was a couple times when, you know, fans of Retronauts would kind of ask if I would ever talk about it on the show or what have you. But, you know, I didn't really always think it was that appropriate. You know, it's not as appropriate as someone may think anyway. I mean –
Well, how come? This is a show.
Okay. Well, I mean, for one thing, sure, it's a retro game show. But we're a retro game show talking about a retro game show. And also, yes, we think it's good. But I always thought, you know, maybe for the most part we just concentrate on doing our own thing as a retro game podcast, you know. It's like if we were all sitting this week on Retronauts, we talk about Back in My Play. It's like, what? What? There's also the fact that people who talk about a TV show for too long, I think, in any sort of venue really starts to fatigue people. Even off the air, it's like you're at a party and it's like, right, yes, Orange is the New Black. I get it. Yeah, I'll be right on it. Yeah.
I don't think you can quite compare Game Center CX to Orange is the New Black, though. I mean, you can look at that there was a video game that was released. This never really caught on in the same way.
I mean...
And also, we're not going to have any theories about the smoke monster talking about Game Center CX.
Yeah, that too. But, you know, that it is a little bit different, but also kind of the same because, yeah, a lot of people talk about those shows. But for a while, it was just me talking about this show. So I think, you know...
You were the evangelist in the office. You brought a lot of us over to the fold.
Right.
I mean, you introduced me to this show.
I brought some of you into the fold. I mean...
To me, that makes what you would have to say about the show a lot more valuable than a discussion about Lost or Mad Men or something, you know, Game of Thrones, some show that everybody watches. Whereas this is, you know, unique information that you're just not going to hear other places. I think you're selling yourself short, Ray.
Yeah, Ray, I think you're the ambassador for the show in America. That's how
I
view you.
I argue that, especially in recent days. I mean, yeah, that was probably true for a time. But what was perfect to me was when we did those interstitials on the 1UP show, where it was a couple of segments about me talking about Game Center CX when the DS game had just come out. And that was kind of nice because it was comedic. You could see me nerding out about the show in a half-kidding, half-genuine way. And that seemed like a good thing because it was also bite-sized. And, you know, that just seemed like the perfect sort of way to, like, pitch it to people who were, you know, happened to be, you know, fans of 1UP at the time or what have you. But then, yeah, of course, I was doing blogs about it on 1UP as well. And it was years of me talking about it enough on 1UP, on my site, where I had the episode guide, and on other people's sites. But the thing is that also that was a while ago now. And in recent years, because of a variety of factors, the fandom of the show has grown far beyond me. Which is good, like I said, because now I don't have to worry about it as much. You know?
There are so many ways that people can access and watch these episodes.
Right, exactly. Through things like fan subs and other stuff that we'll talk about.
You were sort of like patient zero, Ray, yeah, for Game Center CX in America.
Yeah.
He was the John the Baptist of Game Center CX, the voice in the wilderness, eating locusts, wearing camel hair. And now, finally, yes, the whole religion has sprung up around it. But you had to lead the way.
I view Ray as kind of a Jimbo Jones character. Right. This is all going to end poorly.
Probably already has. All right. With all that grumpy bullshit out of the way, what is Game Center CX? I've always found it kind of hard to elevator pitch Game Center CX in various ways, whether it's the show or the game, just because when you sort of explain it to people in a couple of sentences, they kind of sort of look at you blank face at first. So you really have to go that extra mile to get people into it. In my experience, maybe this isn't the same for everybody, probably not the same these days, like I said, because the fandom's so much bigger. But anyway, it's a show where a Japanese comedian, Shinya Arino, who is under sort of this very loose guise as a section chief / salaryman guy. That's why you see him wearing this seafoam green jumpsuit. Because in Japan, you know, a lot of office workers are guys who are just sort of like in these half industrial businesses. Like yeah. You'll see them in the office wearing these sorts of coats and pants.
Yeah, it's something you could wear out when you go out to the building inspection
right.
area.
Yeah. I could see him in a hard hat and with like a clipboard carrying it around.
There's kind of like that meta-text element. It's like they sort of tried to do the Mystery Science Theater Satellite of Love thing, but then just kind of gave up halfway and said,
yeah. And by the way, Mystery Science Theater is my favorite show, pretty much along with Game Center CX, so I don't know if that was one of the factors. That
there are so many things in common.
Yeah, the grand unifying theory comes together at last.
Yep. That's pretty much – that explains how I love it so much basically.
Also, it's a very low budget. It's very simple, like dude yes. in a room playing a game.
Yeah, so here it is. He walks into this nondescript office room, conference room, whatever it was depending on the season. He basically just sits down at the desk and plays a video game on a tiny TV. And it's always these retro games for the Famicom, NES, Super Famicom, mostly 16 and 8-bit stuff. So he just plays it all day, essentially. I mean, he has to start at 10 a.m., goes to like midnight, and he has to beat it. And if he doesn't beat it that day, he can choose to give up on it or maybe take it on the next week. The thing is that Arino's not very good. I mean, yes, he's into games. He's this pretty famous comedian, and he sort of has this otaku vibe to him that he's talked about before on other places. But he's maybe not as much into games as we would be.
He has issues with pattern recognition, I would say.
Yeah.
And given how much pattern plays into, you know, 8-bit video games, it's really to his detriment. Like, there are things that just seem so obvious, and as you play or watch games like these, you're like, oh, yeah, no problem. But he's just kind of blind to them, and it's really interesting to see how he processes these games differently than you or I would.
Yeah, and of course, there are lots of 80s and 90s action games that are featured on the show, and so it's just sort of like watching this man be tortured for
If you're the kind of person who will watch like a Giant Bomb Quick Look and just like flood the comment section with like, I can't believe you guys didn't see this, you're so stupid, this show will probably really make you angry because there are a lot of dumb mistakes, but he has a very great attitude.
And that is true. That is true because he laughs at himself. He laughs at all the situations. And so, you know, people laugh. People in the room, the other staff along with him, they laugh along with him.
And despite those trappings, it's really about childhood nostalgia, playing games both from his childhood and the viewers. Uh-huh. Like he has a box of or a bag of snacks next to him that are
– God, so many snacks.
Yeah.
not healthy treats. This is not a learning program. This is not Sesame Street. These are just like crappy things. That
room has got to smell at the end of the day. Just eating fried squid all day.
Yeah, the best example of that was the episode. It was the road, the Famicom game where you're like on the 38 gates of the Tokugawa. I can't remember what it's called.
53 stations of the Tokaido.
He eats a snack from the region that he's going through for every single gate of the game. It's just like this constant flood of food as he's suffering through this game.
Yeah, that's another thing is that he always has snacks on the desk basically in front of him. It's just a pile of stuff. He doesn't always go through it all, but it's usually like a cuttlefish, you know, some other things that you might find at the stranger corners of an Asian market around here. Things that I'm not so much into, but you know, just imagine it's beef jerky.
So yeah, it's squid jerky.
Yeah,
but with vinegar.
If the show was in America, it'd probably be beef jerky or something.
It would be Doritos. There'd be a sponsorship.
So I was saying about the elevator pitch. Like when I say things like, "Oh, he has to play it all day," people think like it's like a 12-hour-long show. No, it's not. It's about an hour long straight, cut down from those 14 hours of footage or so. But despite that, it's like it's amazing how much could go wrong in one episode, and how much is just so perfectly edited in that way. Another thing is that because he screws up so much, it's like people start to think it's staged, like it's a staged show. But like Jeremy was saying, like he just has these problems with pattern recognition, really. And I would say also, like, would you be so great going into Battletoads blind for the first time on camera? Like, maybe not.
Yeah, I just watched that one, and I was actually amazed that he finished that game.
Yes.
Of course, you know, one of the things about the game is that he does have his staff on hand, which generally consists of more talented players than himself, and they'll help him out. But still, he does some pretty impressive stuff.
And well, some of the mistakes he makes aren't necessarily gameplay related. It'll be, you know, there's a code that you can enter when you lose all your lives in the game, and you can pick up right where you left off. And so many times he'll have made like hours and hours of progress, and then he would just need to press up and B while pressing start to start right where he left off, and then he just accidentally pushes start, and he's back at the beginning. And you just see that look of horrible fear and sadness on his face.
Yeah. I mean, that is the thing. It's like he is playing these on the actual systems, and there's no save states. There's nothing like that. It's not like watching someone on Twitch play an emulated game, you know, like
Well, the save state for him is, I've screwed up too many times. I need the AD to come in and put me back where I was.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And even that takes time. It's still like this manual save state. It's like manual labor as save state. Nevertheless, I think Arino does have his strengths. I mean, he started to play more puzzle and adventure games, and he sort of like demonstrated like this sort of greater deductive logic, you know, as opposed to like his pattern recognition stuff. And so usually, you know, when he plays a puzzle game or something, he usually gets through it, or he at least takes the time to really think about it seriously and then surmount it
after
one way or another.
Watching a lot of these recently, I think the show is secretly about the scientific method, because that's basically what he goes through to like figure things out with every problem. It's very like meticulous and very like standardized, the steps he goes through to solve a problem in the show.
There are also side segments on the show. I mean, it's an hour long, but you usually have a few like 10-minute or so segments to break it up. The main one being the visits to local arcades or candy shops or other sorts of things in Japan that might have arcade games in them, which are a lot. That, like, the English rough translation is like, you should visit this game center sometime. And so it's just where Arino goes on locations, basically a remote segment where he goes and visits these locations and plays some of the games there and has a bit of a laugh.
I thought it was interesting that actually playing the games was really more of a segment at the beginning. Like, I think the show was pitched for season one as a time to interview game developers and talk to guys about making these games. And then playing the games was off to the side. Mm-hmm. But then in subsequent seasons, that became the crux of the show.
Yes, they quickly retooled it after that first season where it was just like, oh, yeah, this is hilarious because we should just make the whole show like this. And so they did. And it's been running for 11 years now through 18 seasons. Some of them were different links that started at different times. That's why there's 18 of them.
And Japanese seasons run a little bit differently than they do here.
You know,
in the
States. Barely even have seasons.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, a Japanese drama will run for like 12 episodes and then be it. Mm-hmm. Unless, you know, a couple years later they'll have a sequel series or something.
And here a season can be like 5 or 6 episodes in some cases.
Yeah. More often now it's been like 10 or 20 episodes of Game Series CX. Among that, there's been several special events since then. There's been like these hours-long live marathons. There's a 24-hour marathon. There was like a crazy 8-hour Christmas one before that. And he's also been on international trips. He went to the USA.
You got to meet him in person, Ray.
That's right. I have been on the show. You can see me on the USA special.
Mm. Wearing the uniform.
Mm-hmm.
You should put – wherever you post this, you should have some picture of that is easily findable.
Maybe. let's see where else. Yeah, I went to Paris, Cambodia. One of the most recent big events was he went to the Budokan. It was a Budokan special. And the Budokan is basically like a Madison Square Garden of Japan, essentially. It's this giant arena. So thousands of people went last fall just to see this special show. And that was pretty intense as well. I think that's a good sort of a nutshell description of it.
I have a question for you, Ray. Maybe Justin too. Like, where did this guy come from? I don't know anything about the world of Japanese comedy. He seems to be just a middle-aged guy. I'm sure that's not his first job in entertainment. I just don't know if you guys know where this guy is from and what he did before. Well, or if it even matters.
Well, not really. But people do end up, you know, enjoying Arino outside of the show because they love it so much. I mean, like so many other comedians in Japan, they all come from Osaka, basically.
Right. I figured, yeah.
And they're all usually duos. So he's part of a duo called Yoiko, and he has his partner, Hamaguchi. And they've just been like – they've been, you know, one of the more consistent ones after a while. I mean, they're pretty rich. Let's say that. They do a lot of stuff. They've been on tons of different shows, tons of different live shows. You know, they make a lot of bank. And so for some reason, it is kind of funny to see Arino just do this really low budget show basically as part of his second career now. Mm. But yeah, that's basically – they've been around since like I think 1990 or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And a lot of comedians in Japan are kind of looking for their shtick, the thing that will make them popular and well-known. And then they'll keep doing that for as long as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then not all of them really have a show in the same way that Arino does.
Yeah, no, yeah. Arino, I think, is a guy who kind of stands out. He's someone who has gotten internet – not super international fame, but this has gotten a following across international boundaries. And like I would be hard-pressed to think of another Japanese comedian who really crosses cultural boundaries like that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm trying to think about it.
Me too.
It's like B. Takeshi, but he was mostly known for his acting here.
Yeah,
you know, he didn't come over with his vaudevillian act or anything.
Yeah, no one comes – comedians is something – comedy is something that's so hard to cross those cultural boundaries to begin with. Like I imagine you know, it's so,
especially in Japan when so much of it is lame.
I think Pink Lady was the last Japanese act to make it over here intact. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But
yeah, I mean – what else can I think of? It's like musical acts or something.
Yeah, music is something that's easy to listen to, even if you don't understand what's going on. Mm. But like a comedian is so based in his culture and wordplay and things like that. And there's a lot of stuff in Game Center CX. They are very tongue-in-cheek. It is still very humorous. There's a lot of stuff like completely goes over my head with my rudimentary Japanese. Mm-hmm. But what I do
if you're rudimentary, then I'm a freaking baby.
I'm like a zygote.
Yeah.
In that case.
Okay. Stages of life here. Kind of segues into the next thing I wanted to bring up, which is like, why should anybody watch this? Or why do we like it? And I would just like to say, first of all, that it's just funny. It's a funny show because it's true. And well, I'm not really true, but it's relatable. Mm-hmm. It's super relatable because the video game experience is not always about being awesome at video games from the first get-go. It's about trying to surmount them. And Arino does this on the show, and he goes through these things that we all did with those games, especially if it's games that, you know, we recognize and have played before, like Mario stuff or Mega Man or Punch-Out. But that's also not to say that you don't know – you can't relate if it's a game you never played before, if it's Japan only or something, because there's lots of those on the show as well, just because, you know, the language of old games is pretty universal, especially if he's playing some really hard action game. Like, it doesn't really matter whether you played or not. You can see what's happening and see that he's suffering.
And a lot of ways you get to see the best parts of these games, because every now and then it piques my nostalgia, or for some of these Japanese games, like, oh, I want to try that out. And watching the show, then you go to try it and you're like, nope. Mm-hmm. One stage of that is more than enough.
Exactly. I mean, that is that added bonus, is that you get to see most of a game you probably would have never tried otherwise. Like, you know, I sort of come from, you know, sampling thousands of NES ROMs that were not named anything specific as a kid, you know, just going through them and trying to play them but not really getting anywhere. And it's like, oh, they sort of show up on the show now. And it's like, oh, that's pretty cool. And now I can actually see what it was like.
Without having to go through the pain
for
yourself.
So that's
or cheating.
Yeah. So that's basically how I think, you know, what makes it so great. And also some other things. Like, even though it's kind of a low-budget show, I mean, it's just him sitting in a room, kind of this cramped room once you see the people behind the camera. It's low budget for a TV show, but it's kind of high budget compared to anything you'll find on YouTube from, you know, Let's Players or what have you.
Yeah, I think something worth mentioning is the fact that it has a narrator who's constantly kind of providing a window into what's happening, and also at the same time making a lot of fun of RNO. And like, one of the recurring themes is how old he is, which kind of gets me right in the heart because he's like 2 years older than me. But it's like, here's a man who spent his 30s playing video games and he can't pass this level. So to me, that, like, the narration really kind of brings everything together and helps you know, with the compression of it and helps you kind of understand the agony. They do a really good job with the editing.
Yes, very tightly edited because out of necessity, it's an hour-long show and it's like a 14 hours worth of tape that I have to go through.
Yeah, this isn't like a literal Let's Play where these guys play through an entire game. Like this is – it's fun because it is condensed. You do get to see the best parts not only of the game but of the show itself. Yeah. So,
and they have real graphics and they have these tense music buttons and all this other stuff that really, you know, makes it feel like a real TV show instead of just, you know, Joe Schmo's YouTube.
One thing I noticed, lots of just stolen music, which I love as a podcast maker.
Well, I mean, quote unquote stolen.
Well, I mean, like there was, I mean, they didn't like go to the music vault and break it open, but they were just like, this will be fine. But I know like Japanese culture is much more permissive about things like that.
Well, this is owned by, or sort of owned by Fuji TV.
Sony's not super into that.
Yeah. But I mean, I see that on Japanese game shows all the time when I watch them. Just like, oh, that's a song from Azumanga Daioh you just used for some reason. I don't know if you're allowed to, but more power to you.
I think it's sort of the same in like the UK. Like the BBC sort of has a sort of carte blanche sort of music library that they can pull from. And that licensing, I guess, is not as difficult or something like that. So I think it's sort of the same case in Japan where they just have like a giant database of stuff and they just pick and choose whatever fits the mood, basically.
Yeah, and they don't have to worry about YouTube strikes either.
Exactly. That's part of it as well. And so it's just done by a team of people who knows what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, there's like a sort of authenticity to this that I never saw on any of the attempts at making a cable station about video games. Like I think people were so concerned with making games look cool that the act of playing video games is not necessarily cool, so you would never see that. Like you would never see someone playing a game on like G4 or whatever. So I mean, I never did. I would just see like here's a trailer or like here's a review or whatever. So I think go ahead.
And if old games come up, it's under the context of, oh man, isn't that funny?
Yeah. I mean,
like, it's like a tongue-in-cheek thing. It's like a throwaway thing.
There's a sense of humility here that I love that. Mm-hmm. They're not like, oh man, we're so cool because we're playing games. It's just like, no, just an old dude playing a game and he's having fun with it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to get on a soapbox a little bit, I think this is a case of an instance where something has a fan base and it's successful for what it is. It's not going to get super huge. It's not going to get as big as it could be if it were like using new games and got sponsorships from Microsoft and Sony. But it is what it is, and it's that size, and they can continue doing it at that size. They don't have to get bigger. It's not like he's bringing in crazy guest stars and trying to just expand the scope of it beyond what he's able to do.
Yeah.
But that's totally
much.
Fine.
Yeah.
Whereas I think something like trying to do something like that in America wouldn't be successful because a corporation always wants it to get bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Here's another point I wanted to make is that, you know, as much as people got into it because of fan subs over the last couple of years, you know, I never thought it was that impenetrable if it wasn't subtitled. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've shown the raw episodes to friends and coworkers' friends and even my mom, you know, and it's all worked out pretty well. Justin here is the product of me trying to like push it on people because we would watch it every week or so in the 1UP office once I got the new episodes or what have you. And you know, that was fun. We got a tiny group, but you know, some people were happy to see it along with everything else that we were doing.
Like the Japanese adds flavor, but the whole crux of it is the game and watching. You know, and that's a universal language. Like you watch him and you know how he's feeling because he wears it on his face. He wears on his sleeve very much how he is.
But there were still times where I had to get people to watch it. You know. I wouldn't say exactly Jeremy, but you know he wasn't there with us every week in staying.
What was it? Not sub for a while. I remember I wanted to watch it, but that kept me away, and I wasn't sure when the fan subs actually started for the show.
Let me have Jeremy defend.
Oh, sure, Jeremy. Now you may defend yourself, I guess.
No, I was really interested in the show. My problem is I just never have time to watch it. That's been my problem with basically life is just not having enough time. So. Yeah. No, I've thought it was a fantastic idea since the beginning. And, you know, back when you first introduced it to me, I really wanted to just completely rip it off for 1UP. But that wasn't really practical because that was right around the time that the staff went through like a 60-70% shrinkage because of the buyout.
Yeah,
very sad.
Anyway, Bob, you were saying?
I forgot what I was saying.
You were talking about fan subs and when that
happened. Oh, right. Sorry. Okay. I didn't watch it until it was fan subbed, and I have a feeling it was like almost semi-recently. Like,
there,
I don't know.
There was a very bad fan sub group who did like a couple episodes and took forever, and they were cutting things out, and they were bad to begin with.
Hmm.
So we don't talk about them. but then around, you know, 2011 was a sort of this double header of Gawker had licensed the show and was putting it on Kotaku at the same time. People from Something Awful from their forums started subtitling it
as well. I see. And so are we not allowed to talk about the dub? Because I saw some of that.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Okay.
We can talk about it a little later, though.
Yeah, that's cool.
But, other than that, I mean, okay. So, yeah, Jeremy's in the clear. He's good. But, you know, some other people who outside of our circles I sort of get to watch, and they're not here today. That's why.
Let's call them out.
Yeah. People who may have been on Retronauts before. Hint, hint. I don't know.
I was not the first person Ray called up to be on this. I'm not a first draft pick. Let's just say that.
It's okay, actually. It's worked out. But, you know, times have changed. It doesn't really matter anymore whether I have to get people to watch it or not. I mean, it's just that you can and you should watch it without me having to tell you.
But you should. You should really go around to everybody's house and go like, hey,
yeah,
you have some space on your computer.
Have you heard the good word?
Subscribe to the Cacho Tower.
Yeah.
This is where the uniform go door to door.
There's always Scientologists at the Powell Street Station. Just set up your own table with like your own little e-reader that reads like interest in retro Game Center CX.
So it will actually be a Game Boy e-reader.
So we're all sold on the show, but for people that you have introduced it to that didn't take to it, why have they said they weren't as interested in it?
Well, I'm sure in fairness, a lot of it was probably in the same reason that Jeremy just mentioned, like people who don't have a lot of time for it. You know, they're interested in the idea, but they just didn't really catch on at the time. And they didn't really work with me all day so they can really have me also pitch it to them all the time. So that's it really.
And as much as it is compressed, it's still an hour long commitment.
Yeah, is an hour.
But, you know, now there's a American release DVD set, and that was sort of borrowed from the Kotaku version. But it's also borrowed from the Japanese version where they just split up the episodes into, like, they basically extract the segments from one another. So it's not full episodes on the DVDs, and it's all kind of a random assortment. Again, kind of like Mystery Science Theater in a way. Not all in order. But, you know, take out the extra segments and the challenge segment, the main part of the show, is usually about half an hour, 35 minutes or so, unless they do a director's cut, then it's usually an hour.
And it's really hard to translate some of those segments over. Like, so I think there's one that's really funny is where he reads from game guides from back in the day, but he uses like a Buddhist – so it's like
it's Buddhist
monk priest.
Reads something from a game strategy guide and then tries to relate it to a life lesson.
Yeah.
And that was a very cute segment. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But hard to – like I can see that as being a little weird to bring over.
Well, in the sense of like it being a Buddhist monk, sure. But I don't think it's too hard to translate. I mean, people can get the idea of it. But that actually leads me to one of my last points is that in a way, you know, this show has kind of taught people about Japan through this video game lens. Mm-hmm. Not just like game culture and stuff, but, you know, we can see Arino go to these different arcades and the candy shops and stuff. Like people think, you know, okay, the arcades in Japan are great, and, you know, but there's many different kinds of them and they're all different sizes. But there's also this sort of thing about the candy shops where it's usually like these old people running these little shops that the kids will run to after school or what have you, and they'll usually have a couple of arcade games outside. And that is sort of like this nostalgic touchstone for a lot of Japanese people. And so Arno will visit these places as well and try out the games there and probably have to kneel down because it's these special little kid-sized arcade cabinets. But you get that sort of sense to it too. And, you know, he'll also just go around and, you know, eat different foods. I mean, even you get introduced to different kinds of food in Japan.
Yeah.
Like just today I was watching it and he goes and checks out this place that was selling, you know, like miso potatoes, miso sauce covered potatoes. Like, that sounds great. Why not? And so, and then, of course, you know, you also get to learn about different kinds of video games that you never heard about and just watch him play. Because there's also another segment where they just do like three Famicom games from some year or whatever. They've been going chronologically. It's not quite Crontendo, but it's like a little tiny bit. They'll show a game and then a little clip of it and describe what it was. And that's just another side segment. So you also get a little bit more of a sampling of what Japanese games were like back then.
And it's something I think that served by these old arcade-style experiences. It's not something I think that would work as well with the games that we have today. Like you really couldn't do this with like Grand Theft Auto V.
No, not so much. No, you really do need sort of that simplicity of an old game, and it's just where you can very clearly see the character dying.
I think there's a pretty large swath of indie games that would work really well with the style of play, and I think a lot of indie games have kind of caught on in large part because people have played them on YouTube and done this sort of taken this sort of approach. Maybe not as expertly as Arino, but you know, that still has translated somewhat. But you're right; it definitely has to be the right kind of game.
And it's those indie games that do channel those classic experiences that that exactly. we think of as retro yeah. and from our childhood. But.
Yeah, I'd love to see him take on Shovel Knight. That would be fantastic.
Right. Or Spelunky.
Yeah, right.
I want to see Super Meat Boy.
Right. That's another thing that reminds me is that, you know, there's some really good episodes you might not even think were that good, like quiz games. Mm-hmm. Like Japan had this whole genre of quiz games that, you know, present you with different sorts of questions on different topics and you sort of do it as like a time – you're under a time constraint and so on and so forth. But, you know, they're kind of the funnier ones because you can mm-hmm. see Arino just sort of struggle and find out what these questions are and have to ask the staff mm-hmm. and they put up signs and what they think their answer is. So, I mean – and, you know, you probably wouldn't even think that'd be that great, but it is. And, you know, it's not one of those typical action games. So that's just another thing that makes the show so fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting to see those kind of games that never came over to the West in any form.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I've tried not to talk too much this episode, but I don't know how well that's gone, really. But
oh, my God. Shut up, Ray. So yeah. Rambling.
I wanted to give a voice to Joey and you guys as well. I mean, Bob, have you just watched it for the first time recently? Or?
Only within the past few years have I watched it. And I'm sorry, Ray. I feel really bad. I still have to play Attack of the Friday Monsters, too. So do you want me to leave? I can leave. No, I mean, like, I don't –
this is later.
No, I actually feel deep regret for not watching this earlier because I'm way into Let's Plays. I have been since they started going onto like Google Video like in 2007.
Yeah.
Street cred, by the way. And I was reading them when they were, you know, just like pictures and text only. So this is like right up my alley. It just was the lack of subtitles really that scared me away just because like I want to know – I know like, you know, Japanese expressions of frustration and joy, but I want to hear like them talking about the games and breaking them down, things like that. And yeah, I've been watching a bunch lately, and I really love it. I mean, I'm filled with deep regret for not jumping on earlier. Now I have like 18 seasons worth of shows to go through, so I'm excited.
A very short 145 hours.
Yeah,
50
yeah.
hours.
I'm going to portion it out throughout the year.
Do you have a favorite episode of the batch you watched? Or?
So far, my favorite is Golgo 13.
Oh, okay.
Just because of my – it's like kind of like a catharsis because I had so many problems with that game. I still can't play it, but just to see him just struggle through it, to see the uncensored parts that are, you know, in the Japanese version that are, you know, you see naked women and just like, oh, I forgot about this. And it just – it's great. I love it. Also Battletoads as well that was brought up. Mm-hmm. And it's just these things that I have direct experience with that yeah. – are the best for me. And I'll watch other ones too, but I just like seeing him go through the motions as I did like 30 years ago.
And again, like I was saying about it being relatable, it's like you have now 18 seasons worth of shows and you will find a game that you have played before or
been
interested in. And
yeah, I think those Western games are the ones that we find most relatable. Like, oh, I played this growing up. And so like I remember those episodes the best. Mm-hmm. But Takeshi's Challenge is actually an episode that stands out so clearly in my head. Mm-hmm. Even though like such a weird game and a game that never came to the West. But that introduced – like I'd heard so much about – like it's such an infamous game that finally getting to watch someone play through this game that's – that I wouldn't – I would never watch anyone otherwise mm-hmm. and see exactly how batshit insane it is.
Yeah. That was the very first episode and then he also played it again in a two-hour live challenge. Mm-hmm. So you can look for those and see more of that.
Like someone actually made this. Why did you make this game? Why are you horrible? Why do you hate humanity?
And now that game's been fan translated in English. So you can find a patch for that as well. Jeremy, anything stick out to you over the years while you're watching it? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I've been pretty hit or miss with watching things. I had a really heartfelt, sincere desire to watch the episodes kind of in release order, but just really haven't been able to make the time for it. But I did pick up the Retro Game Master DVD that came out last year or the year before and kind of watched through that in a blur last summer. And there were some really good episodes of that. I really, I think maybe the two that stuck with me most are when he takes on Tecmo's early Famicom platform puzzlers, Mighty Bomb Jack and Solomon's Key. The Mighty Bomb Jack in particular, because it's such an event. And, you know, his victory there is totally skin of the teeth. So, like, it's genuinely exciting to watch him just barely eke out these victories.
Yeah, that one in particular, that was a three-parter where the first two parts take place at the office, and then the third part is where they do a live stage show. It was like their first one that they did. So there's just a theater full of people just watching this happen and cheering them on. And that was just amazing at first to see it at first. And then they did like the 24-hour challenge a couple years later. And then the last part of that also takes place in the theater. It's just insanity. And there's other theater ones like that that are pretty good. I mean, they're all, all pretty amazing.
But I'm also fascinated by some of the more impenetrable early Famicom action adventure games, like Atlantis No Nazo. Mm-hmm. These games are just so opaque, and they were just not designed to be easily completed by anyone. And for him to kind of throw his curiously inconsistent skills in video games against these like super hard video games, super obscure, even with the help of the people he's working with and them pulling out strategy guides and things like that from back in the day, it's always a fascinating struggle. And at the same time, like, you can look at these games and think, I can see how that would have had a big impact on someone in 1984, 85, but oh my god, that is just not a well-designed game by any contemporary standard. So it's kind of like almost a fascinating archaeological experience, in addition to being, funny and a little bit empathetic with his challenges.
So let's see, what else? I have some points that were brought to me by Joey. I'm just kind of going to try and like cherry pick them or, do my best here. But, we did mention like the staffers, the assistant directors, the ADs specifically, who are usually like these younger guys who, are new hires at the company, basically.
Well,
and their job
AD is technically assistant director, but in this case, it was usually more like an intern position.
Or like a PA.
True.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they were learning, off of Games RCX, because some of them did move on to be actual directors. Mm-hmm. But yeah, their job, once they're told to be on Games RCX, is to basically play through the game, whatever game it is, before taping happens, and basically become experts in it beforehand, so that when Arino does eventually screw up so badly, they can go walk over and actually give some tips, or sometimes even a map that they handmade or a diorama. Some of them.
I love it when they would bring out the whiteboard behind and they would draw the diagram of like, all right, here's how you're going to get past this next challenge.
That is a big element, is the whiteboard. Yeah, that's used a lot. Especially in the earlier episodes. They were actually diagramming out like jump patterns and things like that. And that's happened also in recent ones. And it's always funny to see. Then you're just like, this is so crazy. This is exactly how absurd the show is.
Yeah.
Because Arino just needs to have this hammered into his head and then apply it. So those guys, there's been several of them now. Gosh, I mean,
well, it's almost one or two a season.
Yeah, I only had to worry about like five when I started writing about it. But that's just a bunch of different young guys and some women as well since then. And they all had their extra quirks, mostly because Arino will tease them. Eventually. And then, they'll get teased for even stuff like just having too much of a squinty face or wearing a cardigan or things of that nature. And so because of that, they sort of grow characters through the show, and then the fans sort of appreciate them for that. And then they just become this sort of like nice like second star to the show.
I always feel bad for them at the end of a show where he doesn't beat it, and then it's like midnight, and then you just have that sigh of resignation as they're like, and now I have to record the rest of this.
So there was one really egregious example was when he played Adventure Island, Arino did, and couldn't beat it. And so the AD at the time, Urukawa, he had to basically sit there and play through it to get to the ending, because that's what Arino's supposed to do all the time, just find the ending. But Adventure Island was even too much for even Urukawa, because he was just playing it all through the night, I think for an extra whole day even, and eventually just finally beat it after like I think 28 hours of straight play. There's something that they said.
But somehow they got through Super Ghouls and Ghosts and and Goblins. Like that baffles me more, that Arino was the one who was able to get through. He got through Ghosts and Goblins at least the first time. Mm-hmm. He didn't go for the second ending. But
after that, they've showed the ADs beating the game, but not they didn't have the camera pointed on them. It's just like in a clip over the credits, basically,
where you get to see the ending.
They don't. Well, I mean, my point is they're not showing the ADs suffer anymore.
Yeah.
They're just saying like, hey, he beat it. Here it is. Here's the proof. That's basically it. But this, you know, is into the larger point is that, you know, Arno is the star basically, but they do have a bunch of people that come in behind the camera because it's such a low budget, sort of like almost like a family type outfit in a way. You get introduced to these other people behind the camera, even the actual camera guy, Abe. Mr. Abe, he's older than Arno. I think he's almost 50 now, but he was this guy who used to be a delinquent and he kind of still has a pompadour hairstyle to him. And he's sort of a scary looking guy, but he's also pretty jocular. You know, Andy was really into motorcycles, and so whenever Arno will find like a hang-on arcade machine somewhere, you know, he'll have Abe play it and he'll kick ass at it, while Arno will usually, you know, ride on the back, which you're not supposed to do, but it's funny. It's, you know, it's for comedic effect.
And so they go on location a lot, so you get to see more of those guys. And
yes, exactly.
And they interact with
Abe's also a great cook, apparently, really good gourmet type guy, and he's also a father. So people like him a lot because he's really no-nonsense sometimes. And he's like just another source of comedy. There's also the narrator, Mr. Khan is also the producer of the show, and he's also, you know, he's the narrator, so he'll be the one sort of scolding Arno as we watch, and but also be sitting in the back and, you know, sort of being kind of stern sometimes as well, and that's his character. That's just like a sampling of the different people you'll find on the show. Especially, if nothing else, the ADs will usually pop on camera enough and you can see Arno make fun of them every once in a while. And there's another thing, as mentioned, there was the American release of the DVD and there was the stuff on Kotaku as well, but there hasn't really been a homegrown USA version of Game Center CX, and I think I think that's for many different reasons.
And they really do go all out for the Japanese versions. Like, you get a business – there was one set where you get the business card with it. One of the first ones you got stock in the company in Game Center CX.
Yeah. Well, every DVD set in Japan comes with a different business card and other different trinkets depending on what it is. Like they even have like a fold-out board game kind of thing. It's all super fan service-y stuff that comes in those DVD sets. But, you know, people sort of – the fans, they like to fantasize like, oh, who do you think would be a good host of the American Game Center CX or whatnot? And a lot of people got really onto the fact that Robin Williams would be good.
What?
No. I guess because he goes to E3 and his daughter's name's Zelda.
Well, he's a comedian and he does like video games a lot. So yeah. I don't know that his brand of comedy would really be compatible with this.
Yeah,
he's not so much about the self-effacing jokes and that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, other people have seen like Conan O'Brien. He does this Clueless Gamers sketch on his show. People sort of not fantasized about him being the host, but sort of like compared it to Game Center CX that way.
In a way, Conan's is a little bit more cynical. Like, I don't think that we would get something that's this just nostalgia-laden and not saccharine, but very, very sweet. Like, this is very – this is not trying to be a modern, cynical, like, let's make fun of games in any way. Like, this is just let's have fun and remember our childhood kind of show from Game Center CX.
Plus, you know, Conan's a different kind of nerd.
Yes.
he's a bit more literary. He was never really – he doesn't have any sort of demonstrable love of video games, as even Arno had, because Arno is an established otaku, basically. That's sort of his thing as a comedian as well, because he'll talk about all the old anime and manga he liked and the old games as well. And so I think, you know, and Conan is not really into that stuff. He's not really into that tech stuff, or even like contemporary entertainment of that sense, really.
Oh, dear God, Ray. I just remembered something.
Hmm.
This is not TV, but there was I don't know if it's still going on, but there was an attempt to kind of make this kind of a show again with Tommy Wiseau.
Oh, right.
What was it called?
The Tommy Wise Show.
The Tommy Wise Show, right. And it was like him playing a game. I think it was Machinima or something like that. Playing a game.
What?
And he obviously has no – he's not in touch with reality in any sense. So he can't play a video game either. So like an alien will give him like instructions or like tell him what to do. So it's just it's
like
Tommy –
Mystery Science Theater elements.
Yeah, yeah. It's Tommy Wiseau being Tommy Wiseau while playing a video game. So if that's enough to get you on board, that's somewhat similar.
And but it was like brand new video games.
Yeah.
He was playing Mortal Kombat.
That's true. I didn't remember if the games were old or not, but it was sort of similar.
Yeah. And Conan also just plays brand new games that are supplied by the publisher.
I like the disgust in Ray's voice as he said, the Tommy Wise Show.
Well, it's a stupid name.
I agree.
And that isn't correct.
Dumb idea. But hey, at least they somehow got Tommy Wiseau.
I just want to hear Tommy Wiseau talk. He needs a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's really the point of anything he's in, is that people just want to hear him talk.
It would be hard to get something like this greenlit in the U.S.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's basically the answer, but it is more complicated than that because it also involves the perception of television in America and Japan, that being that America makes more of it and better, and just the way that video games are viewed in mass media, which is not great.
Mm.
And, you know, and then there's that big asshole called the internet that is apparently, you know, is basically just taken that torch and run with it. You know, the retro game, old game, any sort of game coverage. It's basically just now on YouTube, on the internet.
Yeah, if you were going to watch something like this, I would expect to watch it on the internet.
Yeah.
I wouldn't – I don't tune into TV. Like TV to me is Netflix or Hulu or stuff on the internet.
Same here. Yeah, my girlfriend was watching it with me. She's like, why didn't America have any of this on TV, a show like this? I was like, because it – like the internet has made TV irrelevant. Like a streamer can now get more hits with one video than like Jon Stewart's show can get in a night. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like – it's
you
a
get
different –
more money.
More money too, yeah.
You get more control over what you're creating. Mm-hmm. Like – for something like this to exist, it would have to be on the internet. But
yeah. But then there was also G4, who struggled for years to try and make some sort of relevant video game coverage on television. It just didn't work out because, you know, most people who would watch that would just go ahead and play the games, or they're already on top of the news.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like that, as we sort of implied earlier, is that, you know, that's not really what these creators want of these producers of these shows or networks and stuff. Like, they don't see the value in just making a sort of goofy show like that that's about retro games. Mm-hmm. They'd rather just make, you know, ironic asides about Tecmo Bowl or what have you.
Something that, at its heart, I think is very sweet. Like, Game Center CX is just it's nostalgia and just kind of being a kid.
Yeah, it's like kind of like the opposite of the angry video game nerd, where he never gets angry. He's always just he just like sighs with, like, you know, he accepts the horrible things that happen to him. There's never a point where he's like throwing things or even his staff, when he messes up, they're really polite. Like, they take breaks to help him. They don't just like jump in or like shout, you know, things to do like, oh, you should have jumped in. It's just like everybody's like really controlled. I don't know. The attitude is just like so much better than what I see on the internet, you know, for the most part.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm sure in reality the angry video game nerd just sits there and does the same thing.
Oh, yeah, I know. But, like, the facade of, like, we need to have an extreme emotion in this video or else no one will watch it, that's not happening in the show.
And that extreme emotion cannot just be happiness.
Yeah, it can be fear or whatever.
Yeah.
But the thing that Arno helps keep in check is that he has those pads that he puts on his face.
Yeah, what are those? What do they do?
Those are just cooling pads.
Okay, I wasn't sure if they were like absorbing sweat or something, but when he breaks those out, you know it's serious. Yeah. Okay.
They keep your temperature down so that you're not going to get a fever, get too hot.
I see.
I believe they are a Japanese invention, but you can find them in America.
Hmm.
Walk down to Walgreens after the show. I'll show you.
That when you start to lose your temper, you can put one on, write some words of encouragement on it.
Oh, I see.
I was glad I found them because, you know, it helped to complete my costume. Because, again, I mean, as an aside, you know, I did find a way to buy the official uniform. Actually, like, three of them, because there was one that was officially embroidered with the logo. That one you had to order directly from Fuji's website. Then I got two others that were just blank, but they were the same exact type. They were the same model, quote-unquote model of the suit. Mm-hmm. So I got those as well, and then that helped make my costumes. I got two of the green ones and then the blue variant.
Wow.
From season 4.
So you can start recording anytime. This should be a video podcast where you're wearing it.
Before I was on that USA show, you know, I was wearing it when we did live streams at 1UP and such, as, you know, just for a goof.
And for Halloween costumes sometimes.
I debuted it as a Halloween costume, yes. Indeed. God, that was so long ago now. Jesus. But again, on the subject of like trying to like Americanize it, it's like they already did try to sell it to international markets, and then they failed. Then they settled for a lesser product with the Kotaku version because then that was, you know, that was not quite as well produced as what they were originally planning a couple of years prior. So I mean, it is. It's just kind of a complicated answer, but it mostly boils down to perception.
And there were several games based very loosely on the show, or at least from the ideas of the show. We had Retro Game Center. What was it called then? A Retro Game Challenge.
Right, the games?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the first game didn't sell well enough in the States to have the sequel. There was a sequel made in Japan, but that was not brought here. And it's not going to be.
I think we'll take some time with the games a bit later for sure. But yes, that is a very good point. But that was also like, you know, a way that people got introduced to the show and yet didn't, because then people were like, what, there's a show? Or what, there was a game?
Yeah.
It goes both ways with people. And that's pretty funny. And then, of course, you know, there are other people who then see Game Center CX and they fall in love with it, and then they try and do their own little version of it on YouTube, for example. Mm-hmm. There was this very odd sort of like Kickstarter for something where a guy tried to get – he lived in Japan and tried to get like – low-rent Japanese female models to, like, play these games or something like
that. Oh, my God.
I forget the details because it's not totally worth talking about. But
yeah, that's not what made – that's not what makes that show interesting and fun.
No.
It's not Areno's sex appeal because he has some. I'm not going to say none, but it's not a lot.
Yeah. Well, see, anything else that you guys wanted to mention?
I mean, just in general, I think the attitude of the show is hard to translate because we are a cynical group, a cynical crowd. So we need something else aside from like a frumpy looking guy in an office, you know, taking everything in good humor.
Yeah. And we're also, you know, like 15 years out from Iron Chef.
Yeah.
And people appreciated that because it was like ironic and funny and look at the funny dub and all that. But now we have Iron Chef America, which tends to take itself seriously. Except for the chairman, Mark Dacascos, who uses funny faces. But
a lot of humor in English and America is sarcasm. Like sarcastic humor is something that's very funny, where you say something that doesn't mean what you mean. And when I was living in Japan, the first time I tried – like I was trying to explain what sarcasm was. And they're like, oh, they have a word for that. And so they looked it up. And they're like, the word for that is being mean. I was like, oh.
That is true. Like I had to examine –
and it hasn't been used since the 1700s.
I had to examine my own like behavior because at one point I was in grad school with a Japanese student who was my friend who didn't speak really great English. And I realized like everything I say is like behind five layers of irony. So I'm like, how do I talk to this person?
And now look at
you. Then I was like, oh my God, what am I?
all right. So what else? Well, there was also a Game Center CX movie released earlier this year or – yeah.
Whoa.
It was – from everything I've seen and read, it's just a big letdown.
So was the movie like a version? I didn't see this. Was it an episode or was it an animated version of Areno on Adventures?
I wish. Jesus.
Yeah, I want there to be an anime.
Unfortunately, it was more of the former because they tried to do, I think, two things at once and they didn't really succeed at either. So there's basically two parts of the movie. One part is this actual fictional story about this little boy in 1986 and he's fantasizing about getting this girl, but he's also – has these treasured video games that are like stolen by a bully or something of that sort. Anyway, it's an actual real sort of cinematic story and there's a bunch of different cameos from people on the show and different like game developers show up in cameos. So that's neat. That's cool. But there's also this giant other half of the show, which is basically just that Mighty Bomb Jack stage show episode.
Oh, okay.
Just like completely. It's just like this weird sort of like intercutting between or jumping between the two at times where it's just like it's just a TV show. And that was back when the show was not in HD. So it's like you're watching this giant 4:3 episode on the movie screen. And there just doesn't seem to be a real tie behind it except for the fact that, you know, he's playing Mighty Bomb Jack and the kid's treasured game is also Mighty Bomb Jack. So you also get this weird, I guess, you know, Tecmo promotions part of it.
In Japan, though, isn't there kind of a different expectation for what a movie will bring you? Because aren't there just like movies that are clips of animated shows just smashed together? It's like it's the so-and-so movie or whatever.
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
Yeah, there's anime movies. And
yeah.
I mean, movies based on anime TV shows that are not that great, not that well produced, you know, or Pokemon movies, for example.
Yeah.
They're not going to be quite on the level as a Ghibli movie. But then there's also I mean, Japan has had superhero movies, that, you know, like stuff based on old manga and anime that were live action. You know, they don't always have the greatest CGI. Anyway, and then it's just, you know, other stuff, like other spin-offs of TV shows and things of that sort.
It sounds like it's just going for a very different theme and feel than what makes that show popular.
I think it's just weird because they tried – I think they just starkly split it between – things that fans of the show would like and then something that newcomers would like.
So at the end
– it's like here's an episode for people who haven't seen the show before, and here's also a fun story for people who were into
the show. Does the girl come
before
on stage at the end as he's playing? You're like, and I've loved you all along.
No, there's none of that. No, I mean it's
they literally don't tie them together.
It is 100% separate because this story takes place in 1986. Well, meanwhile, oh, here's this episode that was filmed in 2008.
That weird.
See, I can already tell you. I wish it was just all took place in 1986 and Arno was maybe a star or something. He ran an arcade or something and brought all the kids in or something.
Or maybe he goes back
Wouldn't
in time.
Yeah, something like that.
I'm just throwing out pitches here.
Yeah.
How can we get Mountain Dew in this?
Or just make it like the Mystery Science Theater movie. Just make an episode that's just nicely cinematic.
Yeah.
That's what I would have
better
thought,
lighting.
Yeah. I would have imagined that it was just an episode of the show.
Yeah. Like, that's the surface idea.
In a really nice office, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so that was a real letdown. I have not actually seen all of it yet, so I know I haven't, you know, I'm not providing the great critical eye here, proper journalistic critical eye here, but everything I've heard and seen is just too bad. But I'll watch it one way or another. I think they were trying to actually distribute it to like film festivals over here as well.
Hmm.
I don't know if that ever happened yet or will, or maybe already has once you listen to this. But maybe you'll find a way to watch it one way or another. I think is like a good roundup of what Game Center CX is. But as we just mentioned, there were also Game Center CX games. Mm-hmm. Retro Game Challenge for the DS, which was released a few years ago. And we definitely have talked about this a lot on Retronauts and 1UP and places of that sort. So, I mean, those of you listening to the show probably already know what Retro Game Challenge is. But in case you don't, it is basically a selection of fake retro games that are not explicitly based on Game Center CX, but they feature like this story part where you have this digitized demon version of Arino who sort of sends you back in time and you meet the child version of Arino and you play these games. And they're all short form games, but you have to basically complete challenges presented by this game master demon Arino. And
When you beat them, you unlock magazine covers from fake magazine covers.
So essentially, it's like the show, and that's just this great big nostalgia grab. I mean, things that are not based on any real games, but a lot of referential stuff that people who were really into games back then would probably recognize.
And it's cool how they take early versions of a game and then like Hagelman, mm-hmm. and then Hagelman 2 has slightly different mechanics and like you could see it as a – like this is something that could have been an evolution of that game. And by the third one, you're like, wow, they've learned a lot from those previous games.
I also like that they have sequels that are just cheap cash-ins, like that racing game. Like there's a second version of it where it's sponsored by ramen and it's just the same game with different colors, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty clear reference to a Gradius game that came out of it. So yeah, once again, we've all discussed these things, and if 1UP is still up at this point, you can probably find some blogs that I wrote about it as well. but then, Jeremy, you actually reviewed the game for 1UP, and you were also into Retro Game Challenge as well. I mean, anything else that you wanted to add?
Well, I think that game kind of developed around the time that the idea of retro-style gaming being a viable concept was starting to really build. And, you know, along with Mega Man 9, that was really kind of the shining example of, like, hey, you know, we can take all these lessons and concepts from old games and turn them into something that's more contemporary but still feels authentic. And one thing I really like about Retro Game Challenge is that it, in a lot of ways, it feels like a history lesson, even though it's not based on actual games, because it does kind of embody the trends and just the tendencies that sort of evolved throughout the Famicom era in Japan. It kind of is like taking a sort of fictionalized guided tour through reality, especially if you start reading the little magazine clippings that go along with it, where they're talking about, oh, this game that you're looking forward to has been delayed. Oh, it's been delayed again. Yeah, well, it's going to come out soon. So, you know, you guys mentioned Hagelman, and the way that evolves really does feel like sort of a, you know, 1984 in-ROM style Famicom game that's followed up by a more developed sequel that's still very faithful. And then for the third game, you know, which comes out in like 5 years after the first in the video game timeline, it's like Ninja Gaiden. It's really sophisticated and advanced. And I don't know, like, it was very nostalgic for me, even though I didn't live through that specific era of the NES. I wasn't a Japanese kid in the 80s. But it's just a very smartly designed game. And it was clearly a lot of love put into it and a lot of personal experience. And I think that's a big part of why it works so well. But at the same time, it was developed by talented developers as opposed to, you know, people who are like, man, I like video games a lot. I'm going to make my own video game. It's going to be great. Like, they got what was up and what it took to make good video games. And even the ones that I wasn't so crazy about, like The Racer, still really good games.
Mm-hmm. It also came out around the same time as Dark Void Zero, which is sort of like the American-made version of
Wasn't Jimmy Fallon a character in that or something?
Yes.
Or part of the epic backstory?
Yeah. But you know what else? Jimmy Fallon tweeted...
I'm glad you changed the subject.
No, actually, I was going to talk more about Jimmy Fallon. He actually tweeted about playing Retro Game Challenge after that came out.
Oh.
I was like, oh, hey, how about that? So,
I think Jimmy Fallon does a great job of making games feel mainstream and fun and not this kind of thing that's brushed off to kids.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah. I don't have anything against him, but yeah, it was very odd that he was just sort of plopped into that game, weirdly. And that game did not really nail the whole 8-bit aesthetic as well as Retro Game Challenge did, to me. Nevertheless, Retro Game Challenge, you know, did get a lot of recognition. First of all, I mean, the fact that XE decided to localize it and publish it here was crazy enough, especially when Game Center CX had no presence in America whatsoever. I mean, again, they were trying to sell it internationally, but that didn't really work out. So
yeah, the presence
can't
was
really wait for that. But the game is really good, so they just went ahead and licensed it and localized it.
Its sole presence was crunkgames.com, run by Ray Barnhill.
Hmm. Pretty much at the time, yeah, and the crappy fan subs that we don't talk about. Yeah, you had to really go looking for the show if you really wanted to find out about it. However, you know, people who weren't into the show were loving the game. Some of those people, some of whom I tried to get into the show, instead went ahead and loved the game, which is fair enough. Because it is a really good game.
One of them was Jimmy Fallon.
Yes.
Damn it, Jimmy.
I believe he turned us down.
I just kept calling and calling. I should have tried, actually. I should have tried with this.
Maybe you got confused and tried calling Seth Meyers. They all look the same to me.
Yeah.
Those affable white guys.
So, yeah, I mean, I was just as delighted that the game got a good enough recognition. And then people probably went ahead and found out about the show and stuff. Because there was, like, on the back of the manual, there's a reference to the show. It's like, Retro Game Master coming soon? Mm-hmm. Which didn't really happen for a few years. But, of course, the great irony about this is that at the same time Retro Game Challenge came out in America, like a couple of weeks before or after, the sequel came out in Japan. Mm-hmm. Retro Game Challenge 2, let's call it. The actual Japanese name is Arino's Challenge, Game Center CX Arino's Challenge, or Letter Challenge or whatever. It's basically a reference to Takeshi's Challenge, mm-hmm. the name is. Anyway, the sequel is just great. Even greater than the original. It's more games. The whole art is more detailed. I mean, the games are pretty good too, but the whole game is just every inch of it is completely polished all the way around. Completely new games. You start off with sort of this Pac-Man / Draga kind of clone, and then you also have a whole text adventure, essentially, or graphic adventure, where it's just complete fan service because you're playing this character and you're investigating mysteries around a game company with Arino, and you meet different characters who are also big references to other staff members on the show. And, you know, that was great as well. There's a really fantastic shoot 'em up. I mean, there wasn't the first game, but this one's even better, and so on and so forth. You can go to a game store and play different alternate versions of games from the first Retro Game Challenge.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. And also, we mentioned the magazines, and those also have photographs of the Game Center staff members playing editors. Of course, for Retro Game Challenge, the first game, it was people in our circles. They got pictures of people like Dan Hsu and John Davison to play, you know, little characters in these magazines. Just their photos and whatnot, but still pretty cool. So, you know, I was really hoping they'd localize the second one because then maybe I could get my picture in it. I'm not ashamed to admit it.
You should have been in the first one, Ray. I would have raised a stink.
Yeah, but unfortunately, I guess it was too late because they hadn't known about me, really, or my whole.
And I know John Davison, huge fan of the show.
Yeah, I mean,
I associate his name with.
And some other people who really have tenuous links to game journalism.
But anyway, this game never came out here in the U.S., unfortunately.
No.
And there's no chance of it coming.
No, not anymore, because the DS market is long since
there's still that downloadable market. Like the 3DS Virtual Console and the 3DS eShop, like, I think, is something that where they could get a
I know. People are like, oh, just put it out as DSiWare. But people fail to realize that Nintendo really makes it clear that DSiWare is for really short-form games.
Yeah.
And this is still kind of like a full product. I don't know. Maybe something would change. I can't say never, but I like to.
It was XSEED, right? XSEED?
XSEED did the first
one. They take a lot of risks lately, I've noticed. So I don't know. It just seems like maybe if this game had come out a lot later and was like a download only thing, because they just released like a frigging BlayBlue visual novel. Like, I can't imagine the amount of people into that. Oh, that was Axis?
Axis does the BlayBlue stuff.
Oh, I could have sworn it was XSEED. Damn. No. Okay. Well, someone's doing stuff that no one wants. So why can't they do this?
Well, you know, the thing is that
it was Axis. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, people get grumpy over the fact that, you know, Retro Game Challenge didn't sell and that the sequel wasn't localized because of that. But that was all – you know, the first game really hit on like the tail end of the DS boom days because a lot of companies were really localizing things that probably wouldn't have ever showed up otherwise during like that period of like 2006, 2008.
You mean like My World, My Way and Steel Princess? All those games that Atlus localized, you're just like, I don't know why this is coming over and it's going to sell 20 copies. And then they ended up selling 20 copies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like, Atlus had a ton of stuff that, you know, they probably wouldn't even have a chance to now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, then the sequel comes out, but then you have to spend the time localizing that. And by then, like, the market just isn't as viable anymore because then we're gearing up for 3DS. And, you know, it's just not viable for many different reasons. And so that's really one of the contributing factors why the sequel didn't come out here.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even taking into account the licensing issues. I mean, this is a game that, you know, the property is owned by Fuji TV, but the game is developed by Namco. There's a lot of people involved, a lot of hands that need to have money put into them. And I don't imagine that the popularity of the show over in Japan made for a cheap license.
No.
Japanese publishers, I've noticed, tend not to quite understand that just because something's popular in their region means it has a huge amount of value outside of Japan. So a lot of things have a tendency not to see the light of day outside of Japan because licensors ask too dear a price for them, and they just, you know, it's just not worth it for anyone to localize them.
Yeah, and they probably don't feel more protective of it because it was a high quality game. So, you know, I probably contributed to that as well. Nonetheless, back to Retro Game Challenge 2. It was fan-translated just recently. The patches were released, and you can now play it in English. I mean, now you can stop complaining to some degree. I mean, you can at least play the ROM. I mean, I'm not going to question what way people want to play it or whatever. I'd like it if you at least bought the Japanese version first, and then if you want to play it on flashcard, go ahead.
But continuing the great tradition of games that are not coming to the U.S. but having wonderful translations.
Yes. You know, the Retro Game Challenge 2 is in the same wheelhouse as the second Miles Edgeworth game. Mm-hmm. That was another one people were begging for. But again, the timing was just wrong.
Yeah.
The market was not there. Yeah, exactly. So it is in this sort of a pantheon of great Japanese DS games that are now in English in some way or another. And I did do a little bit of text editing on it. If you play it, I mostly did all the Game Master Arino dialogue. But that like that project went in like a first phase and then it sort of died out and then some other people took it on and still kept some of the text that I use, which is nice. But yeah, I have my little mark on that one way or another. Not my picture, but I still have some of my work in there.
So just left your picture in there too.
Yeah. And then another game just came out this year as well for the 3DS. This is the Game Center CX Arino of Third Street.
I had not heard about this one. This was a surprise to me when you brought it up.
Yes, and now here's where I sigh again.
Yeah, yeah.
So who developed this one?
Yeah, so basically they had to get a different developer. The first two games were made by IndieZero, who was always a great developer. They made also Theaterism, Final Fantasy after after this, and I believe they made Electroplankton. They'd done a bunch of other stuff, contract stuff, really high-quality games. And they did a great job on the Game Center CX games. But I guess for some reason they couldn't be available. So the developer that Bandai Namco got next was G-Rev, or Grev, or whatever, however you want to put it. And, you know, they're just not quite as good. I mean, yes, they have made some great shoot-em-ups. Their wheelhouse is in shoot-em-ups, and they have done a very competent job making some pretty good games. But then they're tasked with making a bunch of different fake retro games and just trying to fill the shoes of the past developer who did a fantastic job. And so it kind of really stretched a bit too far, I think. It's a whole different setup, kind of. I mean, you do play this other kid in the 80s and you do meet Arino, but it's mostly about walking around this town and meeting other characters who are also very obvious caricatures of Game Center CX staff members and just playing, again, more different games and completing challenges. But it doesn't really have the same sort of feeling as the other games did because the nostalgic 8-bit aesthetic is not really there, I think. And it's much harder as well with the challenges. Like, they just demand more of you. They want you to go farther than you probably should to try and beat this challenge and then move on to the next game. Mm-hmm. And so it's a bit rickety. I mean, some of the games were fun, I guess. There's like a walking around, beating guys up overhead game, fantasy kind of cartoony stuff. But it just didn't nail it. And in fact, Chris Kohler, you know, friend of the show, Chris Kohler, he wrote a review of it on Wired. And pretty much, you know, I'm in agreement. They just did not really capture that whole nostalgic vibe as well as the IndieZero did with the previous games. It's too bad because, you know, you have something like, you know, it's a brand new Game Center CX game on 3DS. That should be great. You know, think about it. You could have like crazy Virtual Boy references or something like that. But it didn't work out.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you feel about NES Remix?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, of course. IndieZero also made the NES Remix games. And, yeah, those are great because it's like they took the same principle, basically, doing these different challenges.
Which is like living your own Game Center CX episode.
Yes. And, you know, to get a little bit meta, there was a Game Center CX special episode on the eShop in Japan where Arino played NES Remix 1 and 2. And that is actually another tangent is that there are a bunch of special Game Center CX episodes that were made for Nintendo where he plays Virtual Console games, the latest Virtual Console games, and goes through those for shorter challenges. He played all the way through Super Metroid, for example. So that's if you wanted to see him play that, you have to find a way to find the Nintendo eShop version of that. I bought the third game just, you know, out of some sort of sick loyalty, I guess.
And you do have all of the uniforms.
I do.
Yeah, so you kind of have to buy the game.
You have to buy at least one game per uniform. So.
Yeah, I know. Jeremy, did you get it or were you scared off?
No, I couldn't bring myself to import the game when I've heard such poor things about it.
Yeah.
If I ever happen to be like a Japanese used game shop and see it for, you know, 1,200 yen or something, maybe I'll pick it up. But otherwise, I just don't anticipate buying the game.
Yeah, that's a good tip for anyone. I think if you're in Japan next time, just find it used. And it's just it's kind of an ugly game outside of the retro games. Like, okay, yeah, pixel aesthetic, you can sort of make it cute and pretty to a certain extent. But then you have these town segments where you're walking around with Ari Noh, and it's just these weird stretchy caricatures, and some of them have like dithering on them. It's just really, really low budget, and it's a shame. I mean, I can understand, you know, G-Rev wanting to do their best, but it wasn't the best fit for
them. It wasn't good enough.
Yeah. They should have had more time or something. I'll always allow them a second chance, though. But who knows after this. So that was the games, and that's Game Center CX, essentially. So now what? Well, I want you to go watch this show, silly.
I want to go watch the show now.
So like I mentioned, around 2011, a bunch of people from Something Awful started to just, you know, make better fan subs, and they got some talented people to do that. One of them being Nina Matsumoto, who was a comic artist, but also, you know, a Japanese Canadian, and so she did a lot of the translations for those. Very good, very accurate, and then ended up doing redone subtitles for the Retro Game Master DVD set in America. So they cleaned up the crappy job that was provided to Kotaku at the time. And so, you know, you don't have to watch it with the dub either on those DVDs. You can just watch subtitled, and it's perfectly fine. And so, they're still making fan subbed episodes because from the Something Awful sort of collective, these few people who are doing all these new translating. So they just put up a website a couple months ago called sa-gccx.com, and there they have a complete catalog of all the fan subs, basically. Not just theirs, but other splinter groups that tried to do it as well. And you may find a download link there. I can't guarantee that they'll all work, but you can go ahead and report it to them if it doesn't work, and you can find basically every episode they translated. And it's a lot now. In fact, they just started on doing the latest season, 18. So you can find some there. There's still some gaps to be filled, but a lot of great episodes that you will certainly like are on there. And like I said, there is the North American DVD set that is still available called Retro Game Master, the Game Center CX Collection. That's by a company called Discotech. They licensed those Kotaku versions. They added some episodes, in fact, from what was on Kotaku. Stuff like Shiren the Wanderer. And if you want to watch Ari Noh play his first roguelike, it's quite an experience. not always agreed upon as the best episode, but still pretty good, I would say.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but I'm a big fan of Shiren, so it was interesting to watch his unique, quirky take on video games collide with something so decidedly hostile.
Yeah, it's another one. Yeah, it's also one of those episodes that people get really mad at him for because he does so many things wrong. It's like, well, what do you expect?
Yeah.
And hopefully now that we've talked about and explained the show a bit, hopefully you can sort of come at it with a somewhat open mind, because there are still people who get like very upset that Ari Noh sucks at the games and don't think the show is good because of that. They want to see, I don't know, some sort of speedrunning prowess or something.
Which is weird, because a lot of YouTubers are not experts at the game. The thing that makes most YouTube people fun to watch is the ones who are absolutely terrible at games.
Yeah, I mean, the most popular YouTuber is completely awful at video games, and he just shrieks about how terrible he is. So go figure.
And that's probably certainly staged, as opposed to Game Center CX. But, you know, it is fine to get mad at Ari Noh, but also laugh. Just make sure to laugh as well, because he knows what he's doing. He knows how absurd he is, and you need to be going along with that as well. And that's how you enjoy the show the most. So I would also – so yeah, get the DVD set as well as getting the fan subs, because the DVD set is the really the best way now to get those episodes officially, because the fan sub downloads aren't available because, you know, the right stuff. But you do get some great episodes like that, like Shiren and the whole Mighty Bomb Jack saga, the whole three-parter. That's excellent. And Ninja Gaiden as well, which is another classic episode. Go to that website, get that DVD, and just waste entire weekends watching it, please, with other people, if you can manage it. Like I said, you know, I got my mom to like it, so why not, you know, try everybody you can. If you know someone who would like video games, please get them to watch Game Center CX, because it is a very enjoyable show.
Yeah, put out a Craigslist opening, so like, hey, want to get together, watch some Game Center CX? Who wants to join? Got chips.
You could do that.
People will at least come for the chips.
I wouldn't say I condone it, but you can try it out. All right. So that does it for this episode of Retronauts, I would say. Thanks, everybody, for listening again. I tried my best talking about not even a retro video game, but a TV show. Yeah, I hope I didn't annoy you too much, but hey. Thank you nonetheless to Joey Chu who came up with the idea for the episode and, of course, backing us on Kickstarter and giving us the opportunity to do this. And thank you, Justin, for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been fun. And actually, you'll stick around, I think, for Pocket. You can always find us on Retronauts.com. You can find all the episodes, of course. We're on Twitter as well, Retronauts, Twitch.tv/Retronauts. Speaking of Bomb Jack, I just streamed a bit of the original arcade version of Bomb Jack on our Twitch channel. It is more enjoyable than the NES game.
Okay,
it is a much more solid game than the NES game, which is just this giant maze-like thing. So watch me play the arcade game. It's one of my favorite arcade games, really. So, of course, you can also find our episodes on SoundCloud, which we do link to from the blog as well. And let's see, what else? I'll start doing some personal plugs. I'm on Twitter, RDBAAA. You can also read my Game History Magazine scroll at scroll.vg. And you know what? I did do the Game Center CX episode guide. I did end it last year, but I did cover the first 15 or so seasons of the show in text form. It's not that great. Not really my finest work grammatically, but you can go ahead, crunkgames.com. It's right there on the front. You'll find it.
Slice of internet history.
Yeah, it's also nice. You know, it's out of date now, but it is kind of a nice little handy one-sheet reference if you want to see the kind of games that were on the show. But, you know, you can also go to that fan sub site as well. I do another podcast, Goofy Podcast, sometimes about games called No More Whoppers. You can find that at nomorewhoppers.com. I do that with my best friend Alex, who also sort of likes Game Center CX. Yeah. Sorry, just giving him some cred there. All right. Bob, how about you?
Hey, I write for US Gamer and Something Awful, and by this time, I either will be or will have been on a bunch of episodes of Laser Time. So go to Laser Time Podcast. We've had a ton of those guys on the show. They're all nice guys, and yes, you should enjoy Laser Time.
Yes. And tell them to watch Game Center CX.
I will. I'm going there next.
Okay. Jeremy.
Let's see. By day, I'm Bob's boss at usgamer.net. I don't know how that happened, but there you go. Let's see. What else do I do? I do some other stuff. I have a personal blog at gamespite.net that sometimes I update. I have my crazy project to catalog the entire Game Boy and other portable system databases, libraries, whatever, at GameBoyWorld.com. And then there's AnatomyOfGames.com, where I like to dissect old video games that I like and talk about why they're good and why they're well-designed. It's all very exciting. It's old video games, and I'm very analytical and dry about them. Hooray!
All right, sounds good.
Oh, right. Well, also, I'm on Twitter at GameSpot.
Of course. All right, Justin, of course.
Yeah, everyone's favorite site, GameSpot.com.
You usually confuse with
GameStop.
Right?
I run our news department. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can see my writing. We still have some editors left, and I'm one of them.
All right.
So we do a lot of different writing things over there. You can also hear me on the Geekbox podcast with former 1UP writer Ryan Scott on geekbox.net. And my Twitter handle is Justin Haywald, where I don't post very much.
That is true.
Sometimes pictures of kittens. If you ever need a kitten, that's is follow me. And then a really bad joke about penises.
Okay. All right, so I've made my case for Game Center CX, and so have you guys. So it's up to you now, listener. That's it for us. We'll see you next time on Pocket. Bye-bye.